Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, August 14th, day number 226 of 2013. Tonight, we're going to be doing our weekly U.S. Latin America show. We'll be joined in a few minutes by Fausto Wirtz and by Michael Prada, our Wednesday night panel. And tonight, we're going to focus on Chile. You know, we've been wanting to do a show about Chile for quite some time. Of course, Chile is such a success story right now in Latin America. I mean, it is truly the economic miracle of Latin America, certainly a role model for a lot of the other countries. And joining us tonight for a very special conversation is going to be my friend Horacio Marul. Now, Horacio is an international attorney. He has been practicing in the United States for quite some time. He's originally from Chile, and he currently serves as the honorary consul of Chile here in Texas. So obviously he knows, or I should say in Dallas, not Texas, in Dallas. And he obviously is quite knowledgeable of what's happening in his country, having lived in the United States, having lived in Chile, and obviously dealing with these issues of U.S. Chile relations every single day as the honorary consul. So we'll be talking about what's happening in Chile. A lot of good things happening in Chile, to say the least. Just a quick word about my book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. The book is available in print as well as Kindle. And you can go to the website, by the way. You can go to the website and get yourself a dedicated copy of the book. You just, all you do is you order a copy, you tell me who to dedicate it to, and we'll be more than happy to dedicate the book to a friend, to a family member, maybe an old Cuban high school teacher that you had when you were going to high school or college. It's a great present. It's a great present, and particularly for someone of Cuban heritage. Cubanos in Wisconsin, go to the website, or you can get it in Amazon by your own account, or simply look up Cubanos in Wisconsin. On this day in history, we always like to mention on this day in history, well, in 1935, this is the day that President Roosevelt signed into law the Social Security Act, one of the big parts of the New Deal legislation of President Roosevelt. So Social Security is 78 years old today. We're going to take a break, and we'll be chatting with Horacio Maru right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let me quickly say hello to Fausto Wirtz, who's always one of our panelists on Wednesday night. How are you, Fausto?
Doing very well. Thank you, Silvio. How about you?
Absolutely great. And let me say hello to our very special guest, my good friend, my Friday morning friend, Mr. Horacio Marul. Horacio, it is a great honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Silvio, and it's really the honor is for me. I like to talk about Chile, as you know, so I think this is a wonderful occasion to present a new way of talking about Chile. So thank you very much for having me here.
Well, my pleasure. I want you to say hello to Fausto Wirtz. Fausto, let me introduce you to Horacio Marul here in Dallas, Texas.
How do you do, Horacio? It's a pleasure being here with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. As I told Silvio, the pleasure is mine. So thank you again.
Okay, well, we're going to put you to work right away, Horacio.
All right.
We're going to put you to work. We're going to start asking you some questions right away. But, of course, the very first question I would like to ask you is, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've had such a distinguished career. You've been a diplomat. You've been a businessman. You're obviously an attorney. I mean, you're such a distinguished career. Just tell us in a few minutes about your wonderful career.
Well, actually, yes. Well, I was born in Chile, in a city called Antofagasta, which is in the northern part of Chile. It's the place where it's the driest desert in the world. That region was very famous some time ago because it's the only place in the world where natural nitrate is found, and so became very wealthy part of Chile, and that attracted many people from different countries of the world, among them my parents. For my father's side, I am of Catalonian descent, I mean from northern Spain, and for my mother's side, she was born in Italy. So a lot of people in my country came from different parts of the world, and I was very lucky to have the opportunity to go to school. I went to the law school and also to the School of Journalism at the University of Chile. And later I came to the United States through a scholarship to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And later I went back to Chile. I spent a few years working as an attorney for the Port Authority in Chile. And for some different reasons sometimes, I was always thinking in coming back to the United States, which I did about, a long time ago. I came to the United States and I started practicing law in the United States. I sit for the bar in Florida, and so I practice in Florida for the state courts and in Texas in the federal courts. And I'm practicing immigration, and also I had the chance, to do different things in my life. And the only thing I can tell you, I'm very happy to be here and trying to do the best that I can for both the United States and, of course, also for Chile. Right. So I'm very happy to be the honorary consul of Chile here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I should say that you and I met through a group here in Dallas called Grupo Internacional de Dallas. I think we've known each other for about 5 or 6 years now. You were president of that club the year before. And you have a wonderful family, your beautiful wife, Yvonne, who's also from Chile. And, of course, your children and grandchildren. So you're a very lucky man now in so many ways, certainly blessed with a beautiful wife and beautiful children and beautiful grandchildren. So I'm sure you're a very lucky man.
Well, thank you so much. I really, enjoy being with, of course, with my wife and with my children. I just recently returned from a trip to Canada because one of my daughters, she lives in Victoria in British Columbia, which is a beautiful place. We had a wonderful time there. My son, my older son, he lives here in Plano, Texas. He's a doctor. He's an anesthesiologist, and he worked for the Southwestern Medical School. And another daughter lives in Arizona. She's also in the medical field, and also her husband also is a doctor. So, as you can see, nobody in my family is a lawyer yet, except myself.
Well, I will say one thing about your wonderful wife, Yvonne. When you were president, she did a very good job of collecting the money in every meeting. When you were the president, she would always make sure that, we were supposed to make a weekly contribution, and she would go around with her little bottle, the little money bottle collecting. So maybe she got that experience working with you as a lawyer, right? Maybe she was your collector, right?
Well, not really the collector, but yes, she has helped me a lot, but she's very good for that. Yeah, I think she did very well. She's still doing very well for in the GID, the Grupo
right.
Internacional. Yeah.
Well, I just remember that when you were president, every Friday there she came saying, did you put your $2 in? Did you put your $2 in? And she was wonderful and just a beautiful lady. And as I said, you're a very, very lucky man, a wonderful family. Well, let's talk a little bit about your country of Chile. And this is a good moment for you, I'm sure, because there are so many wonderful things to talk about Chile. And I'm going to begin by just asking you about this economic miracle. I guess it's not a miracle anymore because it's been going on for quite some time. But what do you attribute the success of Chile as an economy, Horacio?
Yeah, they are different things which have helped Chile a lot. One thing is, of course, that Chile is a very disciplined country. A lot of discipline in the general population of Chile. I have heard so many foreigners visiting Chile that they are surprised to see that people are very, they respect the law very much. The standard of living is very high for Latin American standards. In addition to that, education is good in Chile. Chile, according to all the reports on the United Nations, there are no illiteracy in Chile. In other words, Chile has practically everybody in Chile. It doesn't matter where they live, in a remote place, in a rural area, or wherever. Everybody can read and write. And so there are many factors in the human composition of the Chilean population that has been Chile a little bit different in that sense, that they have tried to improve themselves all the time. And another thing is the isolation of the country. Chile is a very isolated country from the rest of the world. North Chile, as I mentioned at the beginning, is the driest desert in the world, which separates Chile from Peru and Bolivia particularly. To the east, we have the highest part of the Andes Mountains, which, as you know, are the highest mountains in the Western Hemisphere. And South Chile is the Antarctic, the South Pole. So only the penguins are our neighbors to the south. And then to the west is the Pacific Ocean, which is the largest ocean in the world.
That's right.
And so our neighbors on the west are Australia and New Zealand, as you see, on the other side of the world. So we are very isolated country. So always in Chile, and you are growing up, you always hear, if the rest of the world does not come to us, we will go to the rest of the world, you know. So always we have tried to be part of the world. So that kind of thing has helped. And, of course, in natural resources, too.
Yes.
The fact of having very high mountains, a lot of, as I told you, Chile is changing the geography when you are going from north to south. North is a desert. Central Chile is a valley, beautiful valleys like California. So that allows us to produce, for instance, in agriculture, a lot of fruits, vegetables and all kind of plants, which are very helpful for the economy of the country, because since we are in the southern hemisphere, the seasons is the opposite than here.
Right.
For instance, here we are in summertime. Over there, it has been below freezing in some parts of Chile, you know, because it's wintertime. But on the other hand, at summertime over there is wintertime here, so that allows Chile to export a lot of fruits. So you will see in the supermarkets here sometimes that a lot of fruit is from Chile.
Right.
So everything
exactly.
has been helping the economy of the country, the people, the natural resources, and and also stability. Chile has a very good political stability. So
yes,
that everything has helped.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right about that. And you also have very good wine. Chilean wine has very good reputation, right?
Yes, that's
very,
correct,
very
too.
Very big export.
Yes.
Yeah, very, very big export to the United States. I'm going to let Fausta Wirtz ask you a question, and then after she asks her question, I want to ask you about Social Security and the Social Security system in Mexico. So let me bring Fausta Wirtz for the listeners who know Fausta. She's the editor of Fausta's blog, which is a wonderful blog about Latin America. I think I've shared with you some of her articles, Horacio, over the years, and a lot of our listeners and many of our friends at the Grupo Internacional de Dallas, like Cecilia Torres and some of the others, have met Fausta on our show. But Fausta, go right ahead.
Since you're from the Atacama, Horacio, could you tell us about the ALMA telescope?
Yes, yes. It's one of the largest in the world, and it belongs to, it's a consortium of some North American entities or universities, European mostly, and also from Chile. And it's they have one thing in his favor, that the Atacama Desert is very clean. I mean, since there are no big industries there because it's a desert, and there is no rain. The sky is very clear. So this telescope is beautiful. The whole thing over there is very nice, and you have a wonderful view. And they have discovered several parts of the universe now, to put in that way, or the sky. And yes, it is very nice for people who are interested in astronomy to go down there and to visit some of this telescopic complex, which is very close to my hometown.
Fantastic. I think that opened this year. I think it opened in March. I forget.
Yes, they are opening because they are remodeling all the time, and they are bringing new equipment all the time.
Ah.
And but every time, of course, it's improving much and much, and according to the new technology and everything. So, yes, it's wonderful if you have a chance to go there and to visit that, or everybody who really wants to know about astronomy and that sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a quick question, Horacio.
Sure.
To go from Santiago to your home area in Chile, would you have to go by air or by road? I mean,
well,
how would you get there?
You have just like any other place. You go by plane, which of course is the shortest way to go. It takes only three hours because Chile is a very long and narrow country, as you know. So from the capital city of Chile, Santiago, to my hometown, is about the same distance probably than from Dallas to Chicago or someplace like that.
Wow.
And also have a wonderful infrastructure. They have very good roads. Very, very good roads. So it's not hard to go by car or in buses, you know. But they are very good. And the only problem, of course, is a long distance. So it takes, you know, like 17, 18 hours to get there by car.
Right. And because it's so hot, I would think you need to make sure your radiator is working well. So
actually, it is not that hard. Because all the roads are near the coast, and the coast in Chile is very cold. The ocean is very cold because it comes from the South Pole. So even in midsummer, you get a fresh air from the ocean.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
of course, you always have to take care of everything, you know.
That's right. Well, let me ask you one more question about Chile, because as you know, during the last presidential campaign in the United States here, we had one of the politicians talking about the Social Security system in Chile, which is a very unique system. And as I understand it, people have the opportunity to choose where to put their own money. And many Chileans have opted for private accounts and private investments. It's working very well. It is a model that many countries are looking at. How did this Social Security system happen? And it's interesting, by coincidence, this is the day that, as I mentioned in the introduction of the show, that President Roosevelt signed into law the Social Security Act in the United States. So tell us about Social Security in Chile, or the retirement program, I guess, to be more specific.
Yes,
tell us about it.
Right. Well, let me tell you something. Chile was the first, or at least one of the first countries in the world to establish a social security system more than 100 years before the United States, or 50 years probably before the United States or some other countries. So it started developing since the very beginning. And in addition to that, every time, or every year was improving better according to the circumstances and to the experience. But one of the main things that helped a lot the Social Security system was Milton Friedman. He was a wonderful economist at the University of Chicago. And by a coincidence, some the people from Chile who have graduated from business school, particularly at the Universidad Católica of Santiago, they came to the United States with some scholarships, and they learned this system from Milton Friedman. And so when the circumstances in Chile were the right thing at that time to do, it was established in Chile. The system has been very good, and they go to some the money, and of course you have a choice. It's an election. You can have the old system, which everything is through the government, or the system through these private companies. Now, the private companies, they have a very, how can I say, they are very supervised by the government in order to avoid any sort of misunderstanding or misplacing of the funds or the money or whatever. And it has worked very well. So even countries like Sweden has asked, you know, some sort of to try to understand the Chilean system of social security. And so what can I tell you? In my opinion, and for what I have seen, the Chilean social system is working very well.
Yes, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It is very, very popular. Let me give Fausta an opportunity to ask you another quick question here as we're winding down. Go ahead, Fausta.
Yeah.
To what do you attribute the consistency of Chile's success? Is it that the people are well educated and willing to understand what they can be doing, or what other things would account for that?
Yeah, well, that is answer the question. It was answering one of the questions before. The Chilean people in general is very well educated. Very well educated. I mean, and I'm talking about in all levels, all kind of levels. And that for one reason. Secondly, the fact that Chile is a very isolated country, have a little bit the, how can I say, the mentality of an island. Try to work together in everything. And they, you know, even in the worst situations in Chile, the people try to be helpful in a certain way. And also the fact that the country has been since its independence. Chile really has very, except for some periods of time only, well, we have some problems, political problems about 30 years ago, whatever. But in general, Chile has been a very stable country. Mm-hmm. In Chile, very hardly, for instance, it has been a political persecutions, except, again, for some short period of time or whatever. But in general, we have not had that kind of problem, which have been very common, unfortunately, in some other Latin American countries.
Yeah.
So exactly. All that has helped a lot. The people tend to obey the law and not trying to go around the law.
Right.
That is one reason. Second, maybe education, of course. Third, the natural resources, which is very helpful. And, well, they have been always been the political situation in Chile, again, even with some exception, but in general, since the beginning of the independence of Chile, Chile was never known at the time, particularly in the 19th century, was never a country with a lot of dictatorships or things like that. That was practically unknown in Chile.
Right.
So,
let me ask
for,
you.
Yeah.
Go ahead and finish. No, I was just going to say. One quick question here to finish our chat with you. And we're talking to Horacio Marul, who's the Honorary Consul of Chile here in Dallas, an international attorney, as well as a wonderful gentleman that I've had the pleasure of knowing here in Dallas for over five years. But there's one quick question about the elections coming up. A very interesting situation in Chile, because you have two ladies who are running for president. I think that is probably the first time in Latin America that the two major candidates have been two ladies. Are people in Chile, whatever their political persuasion may be, but the idea that there's two women running, is that something Chileans are talking about?
Right. Well, let me tell you something. Chile was the first country in the Western Hemisphere to elect a woman as a president of the country. When Michelle Bachelet was elected president about 10 years ago. She was elected president of Chile. It was the first time that a woman was elected president, not that was appointed or for whatever. It was elected president.
Right.
And also Chile has the first mayor of a big city. Santiago, with a population now of 5 or 6 million, but at that time was only 2 or 3 million people, she had a mayor as the mayor of the city, which at that time was practically unknown in Latin America. I mean, in big cities. And the others, even the first ambassador to be a woman in the United Nations, also was an ambassador was a woman, and she was from Chile. So really, for different reasons, a lot of historical reasons, women have taken a big role in the development of the Chilean economy and the Chilean political situations and everything. Even, for instance, at the university, when I went to the law school in Chile, more than half of the students, they were women. In the medical school in Chile, also the first women to be educated and to become doctors, I mean medical doctors in Latin America, they were from Chile. So Chile always opened the door to the women in general. Of course, there are some sort of thing that was some controversial situations or whatever, but in general, Chile has always developed a very good standing in regards to the participation of women, particularly in politics in Chile. So I'm not surprised that now we have two women. One of them will be elected president of Chile by the end of this year.
Excellent. When is the election? What month is it?
Well, they are going to have in November it's going to be in September is the primaries and everything, but in November is the election, and the president will take charge of the government next year, at the beginning of next year.
Excellent. Well, Horacio, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. Wonderful conversation about Chile, and we learned so much from you tonight about Chile. Give my best to your family, and hopefully we can have you again. It was really a lot of fun talking with you tonight. So thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening.
Well, thank you, Silvio, and thank you to all the members of the panel with you. And I think you are doing also a wonderful job, talking about Latin America or politics in general or the United States. Everything is very helpful to put people more aware in regard to many aspects of the American life or Latin American life that, is helping everybody, of course. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And hope to see you again.
Well, I'll see you Friday morning. So,
yes,
thank
of course.
You very much.
Okay,
thank you
so
and,
much.
And
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you and good night. And we're gonna take a little break, and we'll be back with Fausta Wirtz, and we're gonna talk about other U.S. Latin American issues, as well as maybe wrap up our chat about Chile. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. What a great honor it was there to chat with Horacio Maru. Really a wonderful man, obviously very well educated, very well versed, someone who obviously knows a lot about his country, Chile, but also if we ever have him back on the show, I'm sure we will, you'll get an opportunity to appreciate how much he knows about everything. I mean, this is one of the best read men, really, that I've ever talked to. He can talk about Latin American history, world history. Obviously, a man who went to school and was educated very, very well in Chile. Well, Fausta, there you're back with me. What is your, if you're thinking about Chile, what is your kind of your reaction to what is happening in Chile? You know, I talked about an economic miracle, but it's been going on for quite some time. I mean, it's no longer really a miracle, is it?
No, and that's the best thing about it. It's consistency of results over a very long period of time, and a country that really has found a way to prosperity.
Yes, and it's interesting, as Horacio was saying, and I think this bears repeating, a relatively stable country, I mean, with the exception, obviously, of that period in, let's say, in the 70s and 80s, when you had Pinochet, you know, and so on. Before that, a fairly stable country for many, many years, and has been very stable, really, since Pinochet departed, I think, in the early 1990s. So, and, of course, Pinochet was a controversial figure. I don't think anybody denies that. And, you know, people react strongly one way or the other in Chile about him. I think on balance, he was probably good for the country. On balance, that's my opinion, because I think he forced the country to deal with some structural problems that maybe the democratic systems would have never been able to deal with. But the bottom line is that the reforms that he put in place, Fausta, have been kept in place. I mean, they have not been replaced even by governments that, like the government of Michelle Bachelet, obviously left center government. They didn't do anything to change the reforms of Pinochet. In many ways, she was very open to foreign investment, Fausta.
Well, I have a much more negative opinion of Pinochet, but what is admirable about the country is that they have been able to overcome not only the horrible dictatorship, but also the damage that was done to the economy during the prior years, and they had been consistently advancing their country and sustaining a high level of literacy, a good amount of commerce, and turning the country into a really shiny economy. I mean, surprisingly so for a very long period of time.
Exactly, and I think you're right. What I think is most what is most interesting about Chile is that they have been consistently prosperous, if I could put it that way. And a lot of countries will have a period of prosperity, and then they have a downturn, a period of prosperity. But Chile has been stable for quite some time, and that's
well, particularly in Latin America, where you have there is a new party that comes to power. There is reforms. There is talk of easing on trade and improving and all that kind of thing. Then some other different party comes into office. Everything gets nationalized, and that's that.
Right. No, you're right.
We're seeing it in Venezuela right now, but we have seen it. It happened in Mexico with the oil, right, as you were discussing yesterday. It happened definitely in Cuba, and I can go on down the list.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right. These swings of these political swings, you know, in Latin American countries are devastating, particularly as far as attracting investment. But I think overall, I was so happy that we had a chance to talk about Chile, because there's so much good stuff happening down there. And we didn't get into, Horacio had mentioned to me off the air when I was speaking with him earlier today that the number of people who want to invest in Chile is unbelievable. He says, you know, he's got people calling him all the time. You know, they want to know, how can I invest? You know, so obviously a lot of people around the world, or let's say at least here in Texas, are catching up with what's happening in Chile. And there is one little historical coincidence. You may be aware of this, Fausta, because you're well-versed in Latin America, but the Texas flag and the Chile flag are very similar, if not the same. I think they're almost identical, aren't they?
Lone Star State?
Yes, the Lone Star State.
There
you have it. Yeah, there you have it. And there are some similarities,
and plus,
I was going to say there's some similarities.
The important thing about Chile is
go ahead.
Is the respect for the rule of law.
Right.
And it comes from the government, but also from the citizenship, both, you know. So that is one of the things that makes a huge difference. You have a country that is committed to the rule of law, where the law applies to everybody.
Right. No, you're exactly right about that. And, of course, I was going to say that Texas and Chile have some similarities historically. They were both isolated. You know, what Asia was talking about, you know, the isolation of Chile. And, at one time, Texas was also very isolated from the rest of the country and the rest of the world. But let's go around Latin America. Fausta, as the listeners know, and those who don't know, let me tell them, you have a blog called Fausta's Blog, and every Monday you do a carnival of Latin American stories. And this week, Mexico is in the news because of two big stories, the release of Caro Quintero and, of course, the reforms, the Pemex reforms that, as you indicated, I spoke with Alan Wall last night. But let's go to other countries first. Secretary of State Kerry is down in Brazil. You have the situation in Colombia with the negotiations. So where would you like to start, Fausta?
Well, Kerry's in Brazil, but the international media has been focusing on what he has to say about Israel, which, from a Latin American student point of view, it shortchanges Kerry's visit, in my opinion. This was a trip that was scheduled quite a long time ago, and so far he has done the usual thing in Brazil. What's to be expected. Now, one of the things that has come up while he was in Brazil is the National Security Agency spying scandal, and that has been in the news in Brazilian newspapers because the Brazilians, figure that the NSA is spying on everybody, including, what would be an ally like Brazil.
Interesting. So, but he's having that problem with other Latin countries as well, not just Brazil, right?
Right. It's not just the it's not just Brazil, but Kerry's answer was, the NSA spying is in Brazil's best interest, because Kerry said that the USA was protecting Brazil by engaging in this kind of surveillance, which, of course, the Brazilians weren't too happy to be. They weren't about to buy that one quite yet.
Well, even if that was true, they wouldn't recognize it publicly.
Call me a cynic, but I am sure that every country is spying on every country. The NSA spying scandal is a much bigger issue, and Kerry should have expected to get some flack over this.
He did. But I thought it was interesting. There was a story in the New York Times, because I sent you a copy, of Kerry down in. That it must have been a pretty rough trip for Kerry, with Egypt blowing up on the other side of the world, and all this, all of the concerns in Brazil and other places about the NSA. But it must have been a very bad trip. When he mentioned to the Brazilian, I'm sure the Brazilians were very happy to hear this, that President Obama would go around Congress if necessary to do something about climate change. I'm sure that everybody in Brazil was just desperately waiting to hear that one, Fausta.
When I read the article that you sent me, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, what is he doing? my reaction was, what is he doing? There are so many issues that are vitally important to the region to begin with. There is this tremendous situation in Egypt that you just mentioned. We can go down a whole list of things. And now Kerry goes to Brazil to announce that the President of the United States is going to bypass his constitutional duty to act on climate change.
Well,
what
that's
is he
what
thinking?
I'm saying. Well, this is what happens when you want to change the subject, I suppose, because, I mean, you're exactly right. The last thing that a country like Brazil and, frankly, some of these other countries, developing countries, they're not thinking that much about climate change. They're thinking about making sure that their factories are pumping as much smoke as possible because they need to create jobs. Now, to their credit, and you know this quite well, Fausta, because you cover Latin America, to their credit, the Brazilians have done great work with gasoline for their cars. You know, they have the alcohol, right? The alcohol-based gasoline. So they've done a great job in that area. But, yeah, I'm with you. When I saw that headline, I said this must have been – this must have been out of something out of Saturday Night Live that somehow ended up in the New York Times.
I mean, if he wanted to talk about energy – he could actually have gotten into the issue, and he's not going to touch this, of how much the U.S. is taxing Brazilian ethanol. That has not gone away. The Brazilians are anxious about it. It's a years-long issue. He could have talked about that. Brazil, on the other hand, is trying to be self-sufficient on energy. So there is a lot of American technology like fracking, like the horizontal drilling, and that sort of thing that he could have brought up that would have been a lot more a lot more opportune, for lack of a better word, or at least appropriate.
That's right. No, you're right. You're right. There's two things. Go ahead, Pastor.
You know, it makes you think that, you know, Dilma is probably sitting there thinking, we're talking with silly people.
Well, I hope she was thinking that, because she was. She was talking to very silly people. You're exactly right. Before we leave Brazil, I just wanted to, if you could give us a quick report. Are the demonstrations still going on? I have not seen anything on in the media, but then again, sometimes we don't get a lot of reports up here about Brazil. Are they still going on, or have things quieted down?
As far as I can see, they have quieted down considerably. I think it has to do that, you know, the Pope is gone, the World Cup semifinals or finals, whatever they were, are done. I think there will be, I think it is reasonable to expect that there will be more demonstrations during the upcoming World Cup next year and in the interim, because the problems that Brazilians are complaining about are not, how can I put it, they're structural problems. We're talking about infrastructure that has been neglected because the government is favoring the Olympics and World Cup projects, schools, hospitals, roads, and so on, that affect Brazilians every day. For now, there has been some demonstrating, but nothing like there was, you know, a month and a half ago.
Well, that could be a calm before the storm, though, because I think as they get closer to this is my gut feeling, as they get closer to the games, and that's just, you know, we're talking 9 months, I think, as they get closer to the games, more and more international media comes into the country, I think you may see more of them, because as you indicated, the concerns or the problems have not gone away. You're exactly right. Well, let's move on to another topic. As I said, I wanted to talk about Mexico, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to mention a second topic. So feel free.
Mexico, I believe it was the New York Times the Washington Post had an extremely interesting article, an article that I thought was extremely interesting about how a Mexican law student was recruited by the Iranian mullahs to go study supposedly religion in Iran, and it turned out to be a full program of indoctrination, not only in the brand of Islam that the Iranian mullahs are trying to sell, but also an anti-American program, a very heavily propagandistic program designed by Moshe Rabbani, which is, if the name sounds familiar, that is the man who was cultural attaché in the Iranian embassy in Buenos Aires, who was connected to the AMIA bombing in Argentina back in 1994. We're talking about July 18, 1994, we're talking about some really very nasty people doing some very heavy recruiting in our hemisphere, not just in Mexico. This is a program that is carried on in Brazil, in Colombia, and in other parts of Latin America. They're recruiting young men to go to Iran for indoctrination. They're back
but,
in
but Fausta,
2 years ago.
Well, 1 second. Fausta, I was going to mention it. Forgive me for interrupting you, but I was going to say, I thought we had a moderate now running Iran. I mean, you have all of these people going crazy over this new moderate who's now running Iran. He may be moderate, but he's acting like the old ways, I guess.
Well, you know, if you have diphtheria and you get whooping cough, the whooping cough may be moderate.
That's
you
right.
know what I'm saying? There's moderation.
That's right.
There's a range of moderation there.
That's right. Moderation
Rabbani
in degrees.
Is,
you know?
Rabbani is wanted by Interpol. If Rabbani gets caught by Interpol, he's going to be tried. He's going to go to jail. He was connected to a terrorist attack in Argentina that killed 114 people. He has been recruiting people in parts of Latin America, including Argentina and Brazil. And there was a gentleman at Veja magazine in Brazil named Reinaldo Acevedo that had an article 2 years ago. I linked to it. He says that once converted to Islam, the Brazilian men who are recruited in Brazil travel to Iran, all expenses paid, with the official objective of religious instruction. And these guys are going to be propagating extremism in Latin America, according to the article. And these are the words of Alberto Nisman, who was the chief investigator of the Argentinian Public Ministry Special Unit for Terrorism. This is not a nice group of men. They may call themselves moderate, but their purpose is extremism, is terrorism, and is deadly. So
that's right. No, you're exactly right.
The participants
right.
are handpicked by Rabbani. The young man who in the article of the Washington Post is going by the name of Carlos, which is an alias, because after he was able to leave Iran, they have been coming after him in Mexico and after his family. So now he had to leave Mexico. I guess the Mexican government was unable to afford him any protection from the Iranian agents that the Mexican government allowed in the country. And the Carlos young man, who is now in his early 20s, is living in the United States seeking political asylum.
Wow. And this is a story that you had in Fausta's blog. I saw that, but it really, you know, it really shows you the commitment that Iran has to Latin America. I mean, they're seriously taking Latin America. I mean, they're seriously looking to Latin America for recruits, as you indicated, and they're very serious about this. I mean, they're very serious, and we need to wake up and realize that we're dealing with people who are seriously committed to whatever they're doing. Well, let's take a few minutes, if I may, and talk a little bit about two big stories out of Mexico this week. And as I said, we talked about this last night with Alan Wall on our show, but two big stories. Number one, the release of Rafael Caro Quintero, that really blindsided me. I had no idea that that was coming, and I don't know whether President Peña Nieto knew that that was coming either. I mean, that it doesn't seem to make any sense for Mexico to do this. What was your reaction to this release? Were you as blindsided as I was?
I thought, I mean, it's a slap in the face to the United States. There's just no... This man should be in jail for the rest of his life. We're talking... we're talking a hardened criminal who just killed in his in the group that he was leading hundreds of people.
That's right.
Why did
right.
they let him out? I mean, I cannot understand it.
Well, I've been trying to, you know, I've looked at some Mexican newspapers and trying to get maybe at least an official explanation, and what there's it's a technicality. They're saying that it has something to do with the venue of his whatever conviction he had. I mean, it's kind of a technicality, but I agree with you. It's a slap in the face of the United States. I would go more than that, a slap in the face of the DEA and the many, many Americans who are working in Mexico with the Mexican authorities to help Mexico fight the cartels. I mean, like this gentleman who was killed on the Querétaro Highway not a couple of years ago.
He was directly involved in the Camarena assassination.
Right.
And kidnapping. He was, and by the way, this man is only 60 years old. He can live for another 20, 30 years with no problem.
Right. That's exactly right. And you don't know what kind of activities he's going to get into now. I mean, I don't think he's going to start selling insurance in Mexico City. I mean, you know,
well,
I mean, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Insurance, like maybe like Vito Corleone was selling in The Godfather 2, you know.
Or maybe he'll get into the garbage business. I don't know. But I just garbage
but,
collection or something.
Now the DEA was saying that they will continue to try that Caro Quintero faces charges in the United States, but you know, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck finding him. Good luck finding him and getting him up here. But I know that you know, there's a lot of Americans down in Mexico who work in conjunction with the Mexican government, and you know, these men are risking their lives every day, and this is obviously not something that they want to hear. Well, the other big story coming out of Mexico this week was all the talk about reforms. Now, I happen to think that that's a good thing, that Pemex is reformed. The reforms are actually quite minor. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, they're going to go back and undo Pemex or anything like that, but apparently Mexico needs to attract some investment to develop its energy resources. There was a very good article in the New York Times about this. What was your reaction to that story, Fausta?
I think it's a nice start, but I have a lot of misgivings because there is no guarantee that if there is a change of administration, whatever reforms are made are not going to be nationalized by the government again. Now, Mexico has a very, I mean, the guy that you were talking to yesterday, Alan, was is a lot better informed than I, but Juan Carlos Hidalgo, writing at Cato, points out that even if Peña Nieto's energy reform is approved, and I'm quoting him, Mexico will still have the most tightly state-run energy sector in the Americas, even more than Cuba and Venezuela.
Right, right. No, that's what I'm saying, that these are very small steps that Peña Nieto is taking. But, you know, as the Chinese used to say, every long trip begins with a small step or whatever mm-hmm. the phrase is. So, I mean, I'm happy to see it. I'm happy that Peña Nieto is willing to confront, you know, one of the sacred cows in his country, certainly one of the, you know, one of the big figures of the PRI. Lázaro Cárdenas is, you know, one of the big, big priistas, that, as you know. So I'm happy he's willing to do this, but he's got a long way to go. And as Alan was saying last night, you know, the López Obrador is already talking about going to the streets. Of course, he always goes to the streets. I mean, this man must live in the streets because he spends half of his life protesting. I mean, I don't know how his wife puts up with him. I mean, it seems like, what are you doing today? Well, I'm going down to the Zócalo, and we're going to have a demonstration. Okay. Well, I guess I'll see you about 7 for dinner, you know? I mean, this is all this man does is demonstrate. But anyway, seriously, these are good steps, but I think you're right. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. Now, we have time for maybe another minute. Fausta, any other story that we didn't get to?
There is still that ship, the North Korean ship in Panama that was found with, let me see, 2 MiG jets, 15 MiG engines, 9 anti-aircraft missiles and parts, 2 targeting radars, and anti-tank rocket-propelled grenades, including a partridge and a pear tree. So that one is still there.
There was also a little bit of guarapo for the North Koreans, you know, a little bit of the Cubans, you know, a little bit of that Cuban drink. You know, they put a little bit of that so that the North Koreans could enjoy a little bit of Cuban guarapo along with everything else that was in that ship. But I mean, I know Carlos Saide had a very interesting article about that. We don't have a lot of time to get into it, but I mean, he was pointing out that, you know, again, you know, this is a dangerous place, Cuba.
Very dangerous place, and teaming up with equally dangerous places.
That's right. You know, I think one thing we can say about Raul Castro and the North Korean dictator, to paraphrase that very popular song, they have friends in low places. And I think that, to say the least, but anyway, Fausta, as always, it's a great honor to have you on the show. Take a minute and talk about your blog, Fausta's blog.
I blog on American and Latin American issues at faustasblog.com. And Mondays I have a roundup of articles on the region, but please come every day. I post about at least one or two stories every day that concern our hemisphere, which a lot of the mainstream media doesn't seem to be paying much attention to. Even when we're talking about Iran, we're talking about terrorism, we're talking about energy issues and all sorts of other things that affect our country.
No, you're exactly right. The American news, now historically that's been true. They just don't focus that much on Latin America, but it just seems right now there's a lot of reasons that we should be at least talking about it. And the American news media, I guess they, I don't know what else they're talking about, but they're not talking about but Latin America. But I want to thank you again, Fausta, for joining us tonight and participating with us tonight. It's always a great honor to have you, and I look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Silvio. It's always a pleasure and an honor, too.
All right. Good night, Fausta. And that's going to do it for tonight, folks. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. And thanks to my friend Horacio Marul for joining us tonight to talk about Chile. And, of course, to Fausta Ward, the editor of Fausta's blog. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.